First up on the High Velocity Radio Show this morning, I am delighted to introduce a lady who is the current president of the National Speakers Association. She's got a new book out called Boring to Bravo, and she's with an outfit called The Extraordinary Team. Please join me in welcoming Kristen Arnold. Welcome to the show, Kristen.
Well, thank you so much.
Well, we are delighted to have you on the show. Tell us a little bit about what compelled you to write this book, Boring to Bravo, and give us a little bit of an idea of what you and your firm are out there doing for folks.
Well, I decided about 10 years ago that I wanted to move into professional speaking. I was a high-stakes meeting facilitator, and I train other people how to facilitate. And so I was kind of looking at the whole landscape of speaking as a way to market my services and get more visibility. And it just drove me crazy that there were some speakers out there who were so scripted and so poised, and I just thought, oh, that is just not me. I'm just more spontaneous. I like to engage and interact with the audience. And so I started noting the different techniques that speakers would use from the main platform that would really engage me as well as interact with me. And so I put together, just as a hobby, kind of a listing, and I was sharing that with my brethren at the National Speakers Association, and enough people were giving me comments about, you know, that's really good. I really like this. You should write a book. And so, lo and behold, I decided to write a book about it.
So what are some of the most common mistakes that you see over and over from either amateur, maybe even in some cases, people that are actually getting paid to speak?
You know, that's a very good question, and you're not going to like the answer. But the biggest mistake that I see people do, and they really don't even see it until afterwards, is that they make the presentation, whether it's at a corporate level or a nonprofit, you're doing some community work, or if you're a professional speaker, is that you make the presentation about you and not about your audience.
Can't that lesson be applied to virtually everything in business, though, from your activity on your blog to social media to interacting with customers and prospects? I mean, that lesson seems apropos to virtually every element of business.
You know, that is so right.
I thought so.
Todd, you nailed one, babe.
Hey, broken clocks are right at least twice a day.
So Todd.
How long did it take you to crack the code on this? I'm gonna go out on a limb here and suggest that maybe from day one you didn't necessarily have this insight. Maybe you acquired it from some less than fun experiences.
Well, I think that, you know, the School of Hard Knocks is certainly one that reinforces that. And then when you see other people who just make it all about them, you know, you kind of walk away and you say, so, you know, what am I supposed to do with this? I was talking to a good friend of mine, and we had watched a very good motivational speaker. And this guy was dropping names right and left and telling stories that would normally make you kind of weep. And she goes, I weep at the drop of a hat. But she was left a little cold, and she was wondering why. And then she just said, you know, it was more of a presentation to impress rather than a presentation to inspire. And I think that there's a subtle difference about, you know, are you really there to deliver information that the audience wants to know versus what you think they need to know? I mean, I've done that a couple of times where I really haven't done my research. I haven't reached out to the audience to ask them, so what is it that you want to know about this? And so I assume, I make some assumptions about what they need to know, and then I tell them, and they're like, you know, not quite working for me. And they don't necessarily tell you that, though. They'll smile, and they'll say, oh, that was a nice presentation, and then they go on their merry way.
Well, and that is that is one of the challenges, I suspect, in the professional speaker arena. Most people are polite, and unless you're just really, really horrible, they don't necessarily tell you that. They don't necessarily give you the negative feedback, do they?
Not necessarily. I think the younger generations are doing it in the back channel. You know, they might not get up and walk out on you, but they're certainly twittering in the back, going, "Hey, what's going on?" You know, and actually, there are some stories, and I'm not sure, Stone, if they're urban legends or what, but, you know, the stories of people twittering going, hey, this sucks, And then they make a decision that at 10 o'clock in the morning, we're all just going to get up and leave. I've heard it happen. Who knows?
Well, Todd and I had the pleasure. What was the name of that thing? New Media Atlanta that we went to last year. And you talk about a brave speaker. He's a guy that we come across a lot because of some of the work we do in the blogging and web platform arena. But the guy's name is Chris Brogan.
And love Chris.
Yeah, and talk about a nice, engaging guy that connects real well with people. But you talk about brave. There was some platform for back channel that I'm not familiar
it's
with.
It's called a Twitter fall.
Okay. Well, he had it behind him while he was speaking.
Mm-hmm.
That was that blew me away.
Yep. So that back channel, everything that people are tweeting about you, he projected on a screen, and you know people are reading that screen simultaneously while they're listening to you, which is kind of creepy. but he can also pull from the comments and the questions and pull that into his speech as well. So it's a very brave technique.
Hey, Kristen, speaking of people twittering during presentations, what is the consensus, if there is a consensus, in the membership of the NSA? There seems to be two feelings on this question of whether people like the fact that their audience is twittering or whether they don't like it. I'm on the side that says if someone's paying close enough attention to a presentation and they're tweeting out bits of information to their network saying, "Ooh, speaker just said this, speaker just said that," and they're sharing that information with their audience, to me that seems that they're more engaged and they're actually listening more intently to the presentation because they're looking for little nuggets that they can share. What is the take on your membership, whether they like that or don't like people twittering during presentations?
Well, you know, Todd, I haven't surveyed the membership. So I can only speak from my own perspective. How about that?
Perfect.
So that's the disclaimer. I think you're right. I think the younger generations tend to be much more adaptive to that kind of style. I think there are some professional speakers who are plugged in social media-wise and who don't mind it. I do think that there are some people who would just rather you turn your cell phones off. Personally, I think the days of telling people to turn their cell phones off are gone.
Yeah.
I think you can ask them to put it on stun or vibrate or, you know, whatever your pleasure is. But I think more and more speakers are using the cell phones to actually leverage the word. So there's twittering, but also you can use, and there's several programs that you can use, but you can use cell phones as a way to get questions for the Q&A session, or you know, use it as a way to poll people to say, well, how many of you have done this, and have people use their cell phones. So I think you're going to see more and more of the cell phone technology being integrated in with people's speaking. I don't think we're quite there yet to answer your question, but I think that there's kind of like the forward movement on that.
But I think it's going to be up to people like you who advise and counsel speakers that they need to be trained in how to incorporate and not be intimidated by that technology. Because I think there's a way to leverage it to make your presentation more meaningful, not only for the audience that's sitting in front of you in the room, but also to get your word spread across the world, frankly.
Absolutely.
So who did you have in mind when you put this book together? Were you really thinking about helping the professional speaker refine his or her craft? Or were you thinking more about the internal manager that just needs to do a little better job than the last five PowerPoint whippings that he gave his staff?
Right. You know, Stone, I think the book was written primarily for the corporate marketplace, for the people who have to give presentations and know that they want to make it more interesting, that they know they want to make it more engaging. But chances are most people who aren't trained professionally and who haven't really studied the craft, you know, we rely on a couple of techniques to engage the audience. And usually it's a, you know, straw poll, show of hands, or maybe ask a question of the audience or do a paired share. And those are very limited. They're good. But you have a whole range of ways that you can engage the audience. And so I wrote a book that's got over 90 different ways that you can engage and interact with the audience so that, you know, they're having a good time, you're having a good time, and they take away what main message that you have for them.
Well, and we don't want to steal too much thunder here, but would you be willing to share with our listeners a couple of those 90-plus ideas?
Absolutely. You know, one of the things that I think, you know, kind of piggybacking with our Twitter conversation, I think one of the things that you can do is engage the people even before they walk into the room. And there's so many different technology tools out there. You can send an email saying, what's your biggest challenge? What's your biggest concern about this topic that we're going to be talking about? Or send an audio blast out, you know, an audio recording with an email. Or put a little vignette on YouTube as kind of a precursor of, you know, here's what you're going to see. If you have any questions or you have any comments, you know, send them to me. I think that that a lot of people, at least the younger, including the younger generation, but I think, you know, people like me, I'm in the boomer generation. I like to be included too, but I'm just not used to being asked. You know, the younger folks are actually almost insistent that you do reach out to them. You know, and you can pick up the phone, you can call, you can send out a web survey, you can do a lot of different things to find out what's on people's mind, so that you're not making it about you, you're making it about them. They've got a hand in crafting your presentation because you bring in their question. Well, you know, Stone from High Velocity Radio said, you know, he wanted to know X, Y, and Z, and, you know, Stone's sitting there in the audience going, hey, they're talking about me. I had a hand in that. That's what people want, and they also want to feel connected to you. So just by reaching out, they may not even answer you, but they at least feel like, oh, they cared. They connected. I'm real curious about what they're going to say now. So it's like a warm connection versus, hey, there's the speaker. I don't even know who they are.
All right. So you got Joe Expert out there. He's hung on a shingle. He's got a little consultancy. And he wants to start doing more public speaking, but doesn't have a foundation and doesn't have a knowledge base to how to actually get started. What's your first pieces of advice for someone like that who wants to get out there and start becoming known as a public speaker and identify opportunities to do so?
Well, you know, Todd, I think you're bringing up a really good point, is that you need to have a base of expertise. So
rules me out. Oh, well.
Yeah, well, we're out.
We better stick with radio.
You know, one of the ways that you can become a really great speaker is if you are very knowledgeable about your topic, because when somebody comes up with a question, that you can answer it with a degree of comfort versus, you know, deer in the headlights kind of thing. And so, you know, if you do have an area of expertise that you want to share that with the world, I would suggest that you just start speaking and then, you know, talk about at the end, find out from a couple of people in the audience what worked well, what resonated, what could have gone better, and you just get better. A very good friend of mine, Willie Jolly, who's a Speaker Hall of Fame, and he said, you know, you want to speak more, you just keep speaking. You just keep practicing. Get your speech really good, and then people will hear about you, and they'll say, oh, my gosh, you really need to hear from Willie Jolly.
And get a cool name like Willie Jolly. Or, you know, Stone's not a bad name for a speaker, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I'd like to shift gears with you, if we might, for a little bit, and ask you a little bit about where you stand with regard to the mechanics of speaking. And I guess what I'm getting at is, posture, where do you stand, hands in the pocket, all that kind of stuff that you read in your typical, you know, be a better speaker in 22 days kind of fare. Where do you stand on that, and what advice, if any, do you have on some of those issues?
I don't get too worried about that kind of stuff. I think people are much more compelled to listen to someone who, number one, has something to say, and number two, are very authentic about it. If you're starting to worry about, you know, when do you raise your hand and when do you take your jacket off and flip it over your shoulder and when do you genuflect at a certain place, you know, it just feels staged. And I think that people really want to see the real you up there. And, you know, yeah, you want to eliminate the distracting gestures. you know, the people who have coins in their pocket and, you know, shuffle the coins, you know, take the money out of your pocket. And, you know, maybe if you happen to stand there a lot of times with your hands in your pocket, don't wear pants with pockets or button up your jacket or, you know what things you do that are annoying to the audience. You have to do is videotape yourself once.
I have to be honest, Kristen, this probably makes me a bad person, but I actually love seeing a presentation by someone who's doing it all wrong, because it's actually quite entertaining. It's like a drinking game. You can all right, every time he does something that you shouldn't do, we're all going to take a slug. It's amazing to me. It's stunning to me how many people you see present that are doing things like jingling change in their pocket. It just boggles my mind. It's amazing to me. I'm going to ask a question that is it's selfishly asked for me, but I have a feeling someone in the audience could probably benefit from it. I think there's a statistic that probably still holds today that more people would rather die than give a speech in front of people. But someone like me who has no fear of that, I actually love speaking. I could speak in front of 10,000 people, wouldn't freak me out one bit, but I don't know that I'm that good of an actual public speaker. What's the biggest challenge for someone who's overcome those kind of jitters, but still needs to hone their skill? What's a good advice for that kind of individual?
Well, you know, many of us have a fear and we express it in different ways. And I think it's about understanding what your fear is. Some people don't want to look bad. Some people don't want to embarrass themselves or embarrass their client, or they're not solid enough in their material, or, you know, whatever it is. And my counseling to most people is, you know, most of us don't have any problem talking to one other person or a small dinner table conversation or, you know, telling a story in front of your friends. And so when you're giving a speech, just think about the fact that you're having like mini conversations with different people in the audience. I don't suggest that you imagine everybody being naked. I never did like that one.
Well, I do that.
That's Todd's technique.
Won't go there.
And not just when I'm speaking either.
But I do think if you search out different people in the audience and make sure that you're balanced in the room, and you just have a conversation with that person, find somebody who's got a friendly face. Smile at them. They'll smile back at you. Have a little conversation about one point, and then move on to another friendly face. And I think when you do that, it makes it much more personal and much more connected. And people will be, I mean, people want you to succeed as a speaker. They don't want to throw tomatoes at you, trust me.
They really are, for the most part. They're on your side. They want you to do well, don't they?
Absolutely.
You mentioned the word authentic or authenticity a little earlier in the conversation, and I know that that's a word that we hear a lot, almost to the point that it's becoming a bit of a buzzword in some circles, but you use the word with a very specific meaning in your book, Boring to Bravo. Give us a little bit of a feel for why you feel like authenticity is so important as a speaker, and any advice, if you have it, on how we can go get it.
Well, I think when you're genuine and authentic to who you are and your style, that people will listen to you if you have something meaningful to say. So, I mean, even if you've got just crappy style, if you are boring as all get out, but you have a meaningful message, people will listen to you. If you are eloquent as all get out and you have nothing to say, nobody's going to listen to you. Where you really have that sweet spot is if you have a meaningful message and you are eloquent, people just walk away and they go, wow, that was great. They remember it and they're inspired to take action. That's really where you want to go. And so, you know, I've seen too many speakers, and myself, I've done this, and every once in a while I get up there and I feel like I need to be more professional than I am, or I need to emphasize. I'm more worried about myself than about the audience. And I think that the audience gets that through the subliminal messaging that you send them, that it's all about you and not about them. And
you know, so, that I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, no, it just struck me that how true and right that counsel and that observation is. I go back to this Chris Brogan guy, who I had seen and heard a lot of hype on the guy, and candidly wasn't expecting much. Went and saw him He's not the best looking fella in the hall. And he probably is a little bit weak on some of the official, speaking mechanics. But the guy is—he certainly comes across to me as just authentic, and real, and as you mentioned earlier, knowledgeable about the content that he's speaking on. Yeah. And I mean, the crowd just ate him up, including me. I'm a big fan.
And if you think about the presentations that you yourself have given, and listeners, if you think about when did you walk away and you thought, wow, that was great, and when did you go, not so good? And my guess, even though it was the exact same speech or, similar, my guess is that you were more in tune, attentive to the audience in the one that went really, really well. You were more comfortable. You were more relaxed. You were more, this word, authentic. You were in a better place than the other one.
Can the venue have an impact on that? I mean, if I was forced to give a speech behind a podium, I would have a poor presentation because that's just not my style. I mean, does that have an impact? I mean, if I'm distant from the audience, I'd rather be able to lean over and shake someone's hand. And how much impact does venue have on the success of your presentation?
Well, venue is a mitigating factor, but you have a lot more control over the venue than you give yourself credit for. So, Todd, you just said, if you were forced to be behind a lectern, nobody's going to force you to be behind a lectern. You don't have to have a barrier between you and the audience. So take the microphone. In fact, this happened to me 3 days ago. They had a lectern and they had a corded microphone.
Ouch. Well,
that's like a leash. So I just picked up the microphone and I took it the furthest that I could to get closer to the audience. And it wasn't a huge audience. It was about 65 people, so I could come off of the riser. I'm a fairly tall woman, so I don't need to be on a riser. But if you are in a big audience, you should really stay on that riser so that everyone can see you. Periodically, you can step into the audience and then step back. But what I did is I took the microphone and I walked into the audience just to the point where the people were started. So that was where my leash ended. And look at this. It's a leash. I'm going to be working from the leash. And I got a little bit of a laugh. People recognized that I was constrained a little bit, but I wasn't going to keep the lectern away from I wasn't going to make it be a barrier between me and my audience.
Well, I think the act of visibly trying to break through the barrier and get closer to the audience probably endears you to them.
Absolutely.
Well, in the fact,
I actually had one client who pulled a chair in between him and the audience, and subliminally it sent the wrong message. It's like, I don't want to get anywhere close to you. So you really need to watch what's going on in the venue so that you can adapt it to make it more intimate. If you've got 200 people coming to your presentation or 10 people, make sure that they sit close to you. Don't let them sit in the back like in church.
And I love it that you're taking control of your environment to the extent that you can. And I think that probably sends a pretty strong message as well. Incidentally, I'm 5 foot nothing in my best boots, Kristen, so I'm staying on the riser. But there's probably other things I can do to control the environment. We talked a little bit earlier about, we hit on this a couple of times, you did, generational differences. What advice, if any, do you have for old gray hairs like me talking to a younger generation or vice versa?
Well, that's the reason why I wrote my book, Boring to Bravo, is so that you can be more engaging and interactive. I think the younger people, and I think us too, want to be more engaged. They don't want to, nobody really likes being talked at. So talk with the people in the audience. Be conversational. Have a good time. Ask good questions. Use some humor. Tell great stories that they can see themselves in. And the list goes on and on, so that they feel like you have walked a mile in their shoes, that you know where they're coming from, that you want them to be on the journey with you.
And I know you feel like authenticity is incredibly important. I certainly sense that you feel like content really is key. But I also know that you do suggest that there's some merit in some of the window dressing, I'll call it, and maybe that's inappropriate. But for instance, you do think that that it's important to think through the title of your presentation. Can you say more about that? And if you got an idea, what would have been a good title for this interview?
Well, I think titles, just like movies, you know, when you see an interesting title, you go, ooh, I want to know more about that. And then you check it out. And then if you're then convinced, then you go see the movie. Well, a presentation is the same way. And, you know, even if we're talking about a corporate presentation or a presentation that you're trying to inspire clients to come to or possible clients, you know, you want that sense of, ooh, intrigue, or, ooh, that sounds interesting, or, I want to know more, so that it kind of piques people to attend versus, let's come to a presentation seminar. That's kind of boring. Why not come to, hey, take your presentation from boring to Bravo?
Well, and I absolutely love the title of that book. Where can our listeners get our hands on that book and learn more about you and your work?
You can find it on any online bookseller or in the bookstores, or you can go to my website, www.boringtobravo.com, for more information about the book. But there's also a lot of recommended resources and a lot of cool free stuff there, too.
Well, Kristen, these conversations typically go about 10 or 15 minutes, but we're having such a good time. We've just enjoyed it. I've actually got a couple of questions, or would like to learn a little bit more about your work with the Extraordinary Team, the work beyond the book. Can you give us a little bit of a feel for that?
Well, we are high-stakes meeting facilitators. We facilitate meetings that you can't afford to mess up, and we train other people to do what we do. We talk about how to build high-performance teams. So that's the main core of the business that we've been doing for about 18 years.
Well, and that is so extremely well articulated, high-stakes meeting facilitation. I like that. Listen, before we let you go, we have a little tradition here on the High Velocity Radio Show. We like to ask each guest, if they would, to share a mistake that they've made at some point in their career and really, more importantly, what they feel like they learned from it. Could we get you to do that for us?
You know, other than not being genuine or making it all about them, I think one of the biggest mistakes that I've made is about not being deliberate in my presentations that I've given. You know, I've thought through kind of, you know, the outline and what I want to talk about, but I haven't thought through how I want to talk about those things and what are the ways that I'm going to really make sure that my point gets across in a meaningful and engaging and effective way. And so you know, as you give your presentations, listeners, if you think about all the things that make up a good presentation, and you know that, you've been an audience member, and just be deliberate about how you're going to structure your presentation and what are you going to do to really make it effective.
Be deliberate. That sounds like marvelous counsel to me.
Well, don't you think, Kristen, that it's shifting your focus from a focus on me to the audience almost naturally does that for you?
It does. It does. But there's a couple of other things that I would also say be deliberate about. Like we were talking about removing barriers. Be deliberate about removing the barriers and all the clutter that might be behind you. And there's just a lot of things that I think that you can do very simply that makes your presentation go from boring to Bravo.
Well, Todd, I'm inspired. I'm ready to get out there and do a talk, man.
Absolutely.
We got to either hook up with Marissa or find somebody that can tell a story for us.
I wonder what Marissa charges. We'll find out.
Yeah, we'll find out. Well, Kristen, it has been an absolute delight having you on the show, and I hope you'll come back and visit with us again sometime, and maybe when you swing back to Atlanta, we'll get you in the studio live next time around.
That sounds great.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Well, until next time, this is Stone Payton, Todd Schnick, our producer Lee Cantor, our guest Kristen Arnold, and everyone here at the Radio X family saying we'll see you in the Fast Lane.